It is Monday, September 19th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, a suspect wanted in connection with bombings in New York and New Jersey has been arrested following a shootout with police. World leaders pledged to share responsibility for refugees and migrants.
So there was a big focus on the dignity of humans. You know, you must treat them properly, and also about countries doing more to share responsibility.
And singer Adele takes up residence in the Hollywood Hills. It's all ahead. The man sought by police in connection with bombings in New York and New Jersey on Saturday is in custody following what has been described as a shootout with police. Law enforcement officials said 28-year-old Ahmed Rahami was detained in Linden, New Jersey, late Monday morning. Well, I'm joined now by VOA correspondent Ramon Taylor in New York. Ramon, what have authorities said so far about the arrest?
Hi, Sarah. Well, we're hearing right now that this arrest took place in Linden, New Jersey, which by many standards is a commuter city, not far from New York City at all. This is the place where he engaged in a shootout, and he was arrested after that. What we know at this point is that the shooting took place not far from where his home business, actually, a fried chicken store, was in operation. That family had been in question as well. So at this point, we are wondering, we know that there might be very good case for a connection between what was a pipe bomb in New Jersey over the weekend, five explosive devices found in Elizabeth, New Jersey, in addition to the two here in Chelsea. And so there's still a crime scene investigation underway.
Yeah, and in the Chelsea incident, I think 29 people were injured. But what is known about Rahami?
At this point, we know that Rahami is a naturalized Afghani U.S. citizen. We don't know much about what caused him to come and target specifically these areas, but we know that by targeting any place that is close to any sort of transit, major transit, that you are going to target lots of people. Here in Chelsea, New Yorkers have told me that they are glad that it didn't happen during the weekday when that area is typically a lot more packed. So his reason for deciding on those targets, I'm guessing that he thought they were high population zones. Luckily, there were injuries, but nobody died during those incidents.
Well, this is occurring as world leaders are gathering in New York for the UN General Assembly. What is the security like presently in New York?
Well, it's interesting. Every September between 9/11 and the United Nations General Assembly, New York City is always on its highest alert. So the fact that this happened, that it got past security, is, of course, cause for concern. However, there are additional state policemen and National Guard deployed throughout the city and New Jersey at major transit points. Whenever you go anywhere near the United Nations, you are just surrounded by Secret Service, by National Guard and Army fatigue, in addition to your regular police presence. So you know that typically that is a very secure zone. The worry, of course, with many New Yorkers is just, well, what about these other areas? And New York, they'll tell you, is one of the most secure places as it can be in terms of having some of the best police in the world. But they have to remain vigilant at all times.
Thanks very much, Ramon. That's Ramon Taylor in New York City. Well, joining me here in the studio is social media editor Andrew Pelshevsky. So, Andrew, there's a lot going on today.
There is, absolutely. Ahmad Khan Rahami, that name has been trending ever since officials released it this morning. And not just trending in the U.S., but trending worldwide. There's a lot of interest in this case as he was on the run. And then as he was shot in that exchange of gunfire with police and taken into custody, the first photos and videos we saw of that were from social media, from bystanders who had just their phone in their pocket, took that out and started filming. I've also seen an interesting trend where a lot of journalists, even on the network news, are using Facebook Live to interview officials and broadcast that out, and they're putting those Facebook Live videos directly up on air. So this is a story that has helped, social media has helped to tell this story, especially today, as it's developed quite rapidly.
What else is trending?
Well, we also had the Emmy Awards last night here in the United States, which are the awards for television. So Game of Thrones was the big winner and making big news. It's now the winningest scripted series in television history. It's won now 38 awards, beating Frasier, which was the previous record holder of show from the 1990s.
And a very different show.
And a very different show, yes. But the one thing that people were struck by on social media is there were a lot of poignant speeches, everything from Jeffrey Tambor when he won Best Actor in a Comedy, acknowledging the transgendered community in his show Transparent. People talking about race issues. Alan Yang is a co-creator of the show Master of None, saying that there are 17 million Italian Americans in the United States and 17 million Asian Americans, but there's quite a disparity as to who's depicted, and we need to change that. And then a lot of people talking about Julia Louis-Dreyfus. She won for the fifth consecutive year Best Actress in a Comedy for her show Veep, but closed in a very poignant way, shaking and almost to tears, saying that her father passed away on Friday. And so she was dedicating this award to him, saying his opinion was the one that mattered the most. So a lot of really moving moments that people saw on social media and ran with as they watched that show.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Andrew. That's social media editor Andrew Pelshevsky. Presidential candidates Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump trade barbs over the New York bombing. The Free Syrian Army's suspected jihadist ties cause controversy in Turkey. An anti-immigrant party gathers support in Germany's Berlin vote. And the Syrian military declared the U.S.-Russian negotiated ceasefire over. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the VOAnews.com website and on our VOA mobile app. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
As the saying goes, all good things must come to an end. And the same will go for the Cassini mission to Saturn as it begins its final year of operation. NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory says it has big plans for the orbiter as it makes its year-long last mission. The space agency says during its final year, Cassini will make the closest ever observations of the ring planet, take some ultra-close images of its atmosphere, directly analyze dust-sized particles in Saturn's main rings, and sample the outer limits of its atmosphere. These observations will provide scientists with information about Saturn, such as its interior structure, the exact length of its day, and the total mass of the rings, something that could help determine their age. The orbiter's mission will come to a dramatic conclusion on September 15, 2017, when it will be sent diving through Saturn's atmosphere toward the planet itself. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, Chechen voters go to the polls. Well, as we heard earlier, world leaders are gathering in New York to tackle two of the biggest global challenges, the war in Syria and the refugee crisis it has created. They're meeting at the annual UN General Assembly. This is Barack Obama's final gathering as U.S. president. It will also be the last for UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon, whose decade-long tenure at the helm of the organization ends at the end of this year. I spoke with VOA UN correspondent Margaret Bashir and asked her about Ban's efforts to assist refugees.
He called this summit today. President Obama's having another one tomorrow, slightly different though. So today it was all about improving the global response to the refugee and migration crisis on a large scale. You know, we're not just talking about Syria, but we're talking about refugees and migrants from around the world. And member states agreed to protect their human rights because there's a lot of problems with people being treated well. So there was a big focus on the dignity of humans. You know, you must treat them properly. And also about countries doing more to share responsibility for caring for them and for resettling them.
Well, now this is happening is, of course, Syria, the continuing war there. And so many people have had to flee, have fled the country. I know that Syria is going to be another focus of talks there at the UN.
Oh, yes. Syria is really going to dominate this week, especially after news on Monday that the ceasefire is falling apart. On Tuesday morning, there's supposed to be a meeting of the foreign ministers of the International Support Group for Syria. So that's Secretary Kerry and some of his counterparts, Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov and others. And so Syria is really going to be front and center this week.
Well, as I said, Ban Ki-moon is coming to the end of his time as Secretary General. This is also the final General Assembly for President Barack Obama. I am assuming this must be kind of a bittersweet time for them, you know, particularly like looking at Mr. Obama. How well did he get along with the U.N.?
Well, I think this is really a big legacy sort of thing for both of them, actually. But for President Obama, I think he's going to really try and lay out all his accomplishments on a multilateral front. You know, when he came into office 8 years ago, the United States was not on great terms with the United Nations. During the George Bush years, they ignored the Security Council and invaded Iraq, and that was really a problem with the UN. And so President Obama kind of returned to the UN family, and he's done a lot on multilateral levels, handling things like Ebola, for instance, getting, you know, a global response, working on the Iran nuclear deal, really resorting to multilateral diplomacy in a number of cases. And so I think tomorrow we're going to hear him talk a lot about that, both successes and some failures. I think he will be honest on both fronts. So definitely, I think, some legacy laying out here. Ban Ki-moon has also been doing some reflecting in the last few days. He spoke to reporters last week, and he talked about climate change, creating UN Women, which is an agency that focuses on women, as two of his big legacy issues that he's most proud of. But he also expressed regrets that he couldn't solve the problems in Syria. He couldn't denuclearize the Korean Peninsula. So I think we're seeing some stocktaking from both leaders.
That's VOA UN correspondent Margaret Bashir. Election results in Chechnya show that Ramzan Kadyrov is far in front of other candidates to continue his tenure as head of the Chechen Republic. I spoke with VOA Moscow correspondent Daniel Sharf, who's in the Chechen capital of Grozny.
The figures that have come out so far are close to 100% of votes for the incumbent, Ramzan Kadyrov, who's been in charge of Chechnya for a little over a decade now. He was appointed by President Putin up until this vote, and now this vote appears to be giving him at least that veil of legitimacy.
Now, I believe, though, there were other candidates as well running in this contest.
There were, yes. There are candidates from the other political parties that are called the systemic opposition, meaning that they are different from the United Russia Party, like the Communists and the Liberal Democrats, but they, in terms of voting, they vote along with the Kremlin and support almost everything that the Kremlin and United Russia support. So they're not really opposition in that sense. And they were fielding candidates here in Chechnya as well, but all of those candidates received a minuscule amount, obviously, because 98.12% is the last figure I saw for voters who chose Ramzan Kadyrov. So whatever's left over there, you know, less than 2% went to the other candidates.
Well, Kadyrov, apparently he ran the area, the region, even though his last term officially expired in April. Why did that happen?
Well, basically, his term had expired because, I mean, he was saying that he was planning to step down, and then President Putin asked him to stay on through this election, and then he decided to continue on as a candidate as a result of President Putin's support. In the meantime, between when his term was expiring and when the election took place, then he was the acting head of Chechnya. And now that he's been elected, for all intents and purposes, then he will continue on as the head of Chechnya.
So he is then a very close ally of President Putin.
Oh, absolutely. They have you could call it a mutually dependent relationship in that President Putin has nurtured him and supported him since his father, Akhmat Kadyrov, was killed. He was assassinated here in Chechnya in 2004, and he essentially took over and was appointed by Putin, and Putin has made sure that plenty of money and political support has come to Chechnya so much so that critics say that Kadyrov rules Chechnya as his own kingdom, that it's very separate from Russian federal law. Sometimes it flouts federal law, that's what critics say, and that he's able to operate very independently, which sometimes can upset the authorities in Moscow. And that's largely because of their relationship, though, because President Putin does support him sometimes, even when other circles of power in Moscow do not want to see Kadyrov being supported so much. So they have a very tight relationship, and Kadyrov, for his part, is providing the stability and the security and support for President Putin here in Chechnya. They've, you know, been fighting an insurgency for quite some time, and Kadyrov, using his strong-arm tactics, has managed to successfully put down the insurgency for the most part. Of course, rights activists say that he's using tactics that are very heavy-handed in order to do so, and violating human rights. There are allegations of torture, abductions, and even extrajudicial killings. Of course, the authorities here deny that they're involved in any of that, and Kadyrov has specifically said that they don't do those types of things. But he does have a very strong reaction to any kind of opposition or public criticism of his policies. And President Putin, for the most part, has supported him in his policies. Only some very mild criticism that's come from President Putin in the past over some of the things that Kadyrov has done here, including authorizing the collective punishment of families, relatives of insurgents, burning down their houses and so forth. Putin had some words to say about that when he was asked at his annual press conference, and he did come out and say that that was inappropriate.
That's VOA Moscow correspondent Daniel Scharf reporting from Grozny, Chechnya. This is VOA.
The U.S. presidential election takes place on November 8, 2016. VOA provides extensive coverage of this important political event. Who are the candidates, and what are the issues that will determine who the next president will be? Tune in around the clock for coverage of the U.S. presidential election, right here on VOA.
Hi, I'm Nikki Strong. You love music? How about Blake Shelton and Carrie Underwood? Or Merle Haggard and Loretta Lynn? Experience the best in country music on Country Hits USA. I bring you some country rock, outlaw, a little hillbilly, contemporary, and more, with a dash of entertainment news, too. So join me for Country Hits USA on VOA 1, the voice of America.
Los Angeles has got a new music superstar, and VOA Top 20 Countdown host Ray McDonald and International Edition host, Jim Stevenson explain.
There's a fire starting in my heart.
Another big name moving to L.A.
Yes, and that's not the only change going on in the life of Adele. She is currently on a world tour in support of her 25 album, and this is her first tour in 5 years, so people were really primed to see Adele, but they may have to wait twice as long for her next trip. Now, Adele's current tour started in February. It ends in November after more than 100 shows, but a source tells the London Sun that right now, Adele's top priority is her 3-year-old son, Angelo. She takes Angelo with her on the road, but next year he's going to start going to preschool, and that's going to make things a little more difficult. So Adele is reportedly considering taking a 10-year break from touring.
Wow, that's
to
major.
Be a mom, to be a full-time mom. Now, the Sun reports, the London Sun that is, that Adele could change her mind about touring if she gets a Las Vegas-style residency. Now, some other major singing stars turned moms have found this to be very workable. People like Britney Spears, Jennifer Lopez, and Celine Dion. I mean, you are in the same spot for long periods of time, so there aren't any touring considerations to worry about. Also, Adele looks like she may be shifting her home. She and her partner Simon Konecki, along with Angelo, recently bought a $7 million mansion up in the Hollywood Hills. Adele apparently likes Southern California a whole lot. And she said originally her intention was to stay there for about 8 months and experience Christmas in Southern California, something that she said they all would love to do. Well, Adele apparently loves the L.A. area so much that she's looking into schools for Angelo, and she's thinking of permanently relocating. She has sold her townhouse back in England, so it looks like Adele is getting set to move into her mansion high in the Hollywood Hills and maybe not to leave it for 10 years or so.
Well, she'll definitely have a lot of company in the area, and presumably while her son is at school, perhaps she might do some recording.
Well, yeah, and there's also a huge British expatriate community in Southern California. Reportedly, one of her best friends in Los Angeles is the wife of Robbie Williams, who is also a huge British star who now lives in L.A. at least part of the year.
All right.
So welcome, welcome to L.A., Adele.
Her next album will not be 35. We'll have a lower number for that.
Yeah, she said she's done with numerically titled albums.
Okay.
You know, she's her age, she says, it's irrelevant now. So who knows what her next album is going to be called.
Well, maybe she'll start with her son's age or go with something else.
The possibilities are endless.
Well, she's always number one, at least with us. And number 20 is the magic number for Ray McDonald. He's our VOA Top 20 countdown each and every week.
Every Thursday on VOA 1.
And follow him on Twitter.
At Ray on the Hits.
Thank you, Ray.
You got it, Jim.
That's the music of Adele, and that is our show for today. Please remember to visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks so much for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The problems facing the world today are notoriously resistant to unilateral solutions, said U.S. Deputy Secretary of State Antony Blinken in a recent address in New York. Mr. Blinken spoke days before the opening of the 71st meeting of the U.N. General Assembly. He said the national interest of the United States demands the global engagement that has been the hallmark of President Barack Obama's administration, engagement built on the foundation of a system of rules, principles, and international institutions, which the United States, as the world's rising global power after the Second World War, helped establish. It is a system not without problems, but which got the big picture right, said Deputy Secretary Blinken, averting new global cataclysms, ending the Cold War peacefully, creating the space and stability for countries to prosper. Under President Obama's engagement policy, Mr. Blinken noted, the United States, among other instances, worked at the UN Security Council to advance nuclear negotiations with Iran and to destroy Syria's declared strategic chemical weapons capacity. Mr. Blinken offered examples of collaboration in human rights with our re-engagement on the Human Rights Council, where we have shed light on some of the world's worst human rights conditions and violators, and work the U.S. has done with new leadership at the Organization of American States to strengthen that institution's role in defending democracy and promoting human rights. Mr. Blinken stated we have reinvigorated our transatlantic partnerships and strengthened relationships with Asia's key institutions and collaborative efforts in establishing a coalition of more than 67 countries to confront Daesh and undermine its vicious, phony caliphate. Working with others, Deputy Secretary Blinken said, we build a foundation of trust, greater alignment of interest, habits of cooperation, and greater legitimacy that better enables us to mobilize others against common threats and seize common opportunities. The bulk of U.S. global engagement happens at the United Nations, which, despite its flaws and its need for reform, Mr. Blinken called the gold standard of global action when mobilized effectively. Now was the time to strengthen the U.N., to adapt it to new realities, he said. The UN is worth fighting for, said Deputy Secretary Blinken. It ensures that our collective action better upholds our own promises, and it will help us shape and adopt an international system that actually lives up to the vision of those who first built it, a global project that remains now, as it did then, indispensable to the health, the strength, the security, the prosperity of every nation, especially the United States.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.